Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. Wow, what an episode we have for y'all today. I mean, honestly, I don't know why I'm talking like a robot. It is an amazing episode. Not that I would admit if it wasn't. Can you imagine if I was... Never mind.
You're like, we had a amazing episode. Psych! What would
Sorry,
this be?
Sorry, this is not a good intro. Today we have Nicole Thurman.
Yes.
She is so funny. She tells us all about her journey going into comedy and starting out doing dramatic theater on stage, improv, all of that, and her new podcast with former guest and hilarious person, Marcela Arguello, called The Scroll Down. It's so, so funny. It's already out, so go listen to it. Until then, listen to this.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pets? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, I'm Shireen.
Hi, Shireen, this is Anna.
Another week with no AC during the recording, so we're going to be sweaty, sweaty people.
I thrive with no AC. It makes me just a monster of a human being, and that's my best self. No, I'm just joking. I hate the lack of AC. You know what? If there ever comes a point where we're in like an apocalyptic situation where all ACs have been taken from us... I'll kill myself. I don't even care. I'll fucking kill. I will blow my fucking brains out. Sorry, but it is what it is.
I won't live first.
In this heat.
Yeah, I mean, it's bad, but we suffer through it for our amazing guests. But before we bring on our amazing guest, you messaged me yesterday at like 10 p.m.
So isn't it like BC before Christ, after Christ, whatever the hell? Let's call this
BD.
Well, this is AC.
Oh, AC. Yes,
this is AC.
Yes.
This is after cock.
I was going to say AD, like BD, like before dick, but cock sounds better.
No, I you know what? Let's do AD after dong.
Okay. After dong is funny. BC before cock. Got it. So yeah, you texted me at like 10 p.m. The succession of texts were very funny to me. You were like, you don't have to watch the show, but when you have time, go to Sex/Life on Netflix. Skip to episode 3, 19 minutes, 40 seconds. Get ready. And I'm like, okay, this is too cryptic to ignore. So I immediately went and I saw one of the biggest penises I've ever seen on Netflix. It was huge.
I just think Netflix is trolling us. Because I understand I've been reading that their numbers have been a little flat.
Okay.
Because there's so many streaming opportunities.
Also, a lot of the original shows are not good.
Yeah, like what you're watching. So they were like, okay, women loved Bridgerton. They loved a dude that you had to force with your life's will to come inside you. Okay? Have you seen Bridgerton?
No, I don't care.
Well, sorry, spoiler alert.
It's fine.
It's not that much of a spoiler. I mean, like, what does that even mean?
I heard that he had sexual issues. And stuff.
He had
fine.
Daddy issues, but whatever. Yeah. So they were like, well, they're loving that. So you know what we do? We show them the biggest dong. The most absurdly huge dong out
flaccid.
Of
flaccid. Flaccid. Soft.
But like zero warning. You don't even know you're about to see a huge dong. It's just all like,
okay. I watched like the scene leading up to it, and it's so weird. It was like really suspenseful and strange and creepy. It's basically this really buff guy following around another fit guy at the gym, and the guy goes into the shower and this buff angry man follows him, like takes off his towel. They're both butt naked in the shower, and he's like, I guess, waiting for him to turn around so he can see his giant penis. But I had no idea what was happening. I was like, what's this? Is so suspenseful. The music is creeping me out.
To give some context, it all follows Iranian-American actress Sarah Shahi, which is why I started watching it, being like, hell yeah, shout out to my Iranian women, to immediately be like, what the fuck am I watching? So the guy who follows Big Dick is her husband. Big Dick is her ex-boyfriend. So is now being traumatized seeing ex-boyfriend's Big Dick and being like, oh no.
Right. Right. Dick.
So anyway, we should bring our guest in.
Yeah. This has been a thrilling intro. But today we have an iconic legend of a guest. We've wanted her on for a long time. She's hilarious. She's a comedian. She has a new podcast coming out with Marcela Arguello, one of our favorite guests ever, one of our favorite people ever. It's called Scroll Down. And we're going to talk to her all about it. It's Nicole Thurman.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Sorry to make you sit there quietly while we talked about big old dongs.
No, I was very excited. I was laughing really hard silently and just trying to picture how big this dong is going to be. And I'm going to scope it out after the
episode.
I
hope we're not hyping it up too much, but it is big. It is, yeah.
I feel like you wouldn't be hyping it up. I feel like it's got to be pretty big. And especially when you're not expecting it, that's a lot.
My mouth just was agape. I as soon as I saw it, I was like, what?
You're like, what is that dong?
I kind of regret spoiling what the surprise is for you because I think that was also part of it for me. I was just like, I had no idea what this cryptic thing was that Anna told me to see, but it's still going to be a shocker, I think.
I know. I think so, too. I'm excited. I'm going to check it out. I was kind of curious about that show anyway. I was hearing it was okay, maybe not. So we'll see.
Yeah.
At least it's got that.
Yes. It's not the greatest show I've ever seen by any means, but it's definitely entertaining in the sense that it's like, it's just like lonely, bored, midlife crisis housewife misses her ex boyfriend and you're like, oh, okay, and then proceed to have some of the most unrealistic sexual situations where you're like, I would never do that, that's absurd, why would you fuck there, why would you fuck
Does it mostly exist as softcore porn, is that what we're doing?
I think so. I watched the scene that I told you about and the scene right before it, like I just started in the middle of this one scene where like this couple, the guy with the huge dong, I'm pretty sure, like fingers this girl in an elevator and they're going up to the 22nd floor and the whole thing is like, you have 19 floors to come. And he's just like, it's just like I don't know.
Again, not realistic. You can't come in 19
floors.
And
those elevators go really fast.
Yes.
When the building's that tall, the elevator's going to just jet up there real quick.
This was an old ass elevator, I guess.
So you have to be like, okay, let's do this right now.
You have to be like halfway coming when you get on the elevator.
Yes.
Like rubbing your legs together or something, figuring out a way to make it work.
It's definitely just a raunchy romp. That's what this show is. And I only saw basically 3 minutes of it to get to that conclusion.
Wow,
it is called Sex Life. So spoiler alert.
I mean, personally, I would not hook up with, I mean, like the whole idea that, I'm sorry, we're still continuing to talk about this, but if your dick is about, 10 feet long, soft, what are we doing when it's hard? You're just you're like jumbling my intestines. Like I have to have surgery after every time we have sex because like they're like, sorry, your uterus went up there. You're like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, there's that phrase, I want you to rearrange my guts, but like we don't mean it literally. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like we don't really want you to go there.
I mean, the vagina can stretch, so you never know.
But how high up are you willing to go?
Someone out there is probably a good fit, you know? Everyone has a puzzle piece that goes around their
dick.
That's
true.
Yeah, there's some woman with I have a tunnel vagina. So find a man to fill the tunnel.
The tunnel vagina. I love that.
And she's like, finally, representation for me.
Yeah, in my tunnel vagina.
Exactly.
God bless a tunnel vagina. More power to you. Nicole, thank you so much for joining us. You are so, so funny. One of the funniest things, which I know you did a while ago, but I just think about it all the time when I'm on a meeting on the computer, is that video you have where you're like, your face immediately after a FaceTime call or a Zoom call, and just like you're smiling, you're like, bye, and your face just immediately drops. And I just do that all the time anyway, but every time I do it, I'm like, Nicole.
Yes.
It's such so a funny video.
I can't even tell you how many times I've been on a Zoom call and I'm like, okay, everybody, thanks, I'll talk to you later, bye. And everybody's like, this is like that video. This is like the video you did. I'm like, I know it is. It was funny because it was like already relevant enough ish, you know? But then once the pandemic started and everybody was doing video calls all the time, yeah. It's like, that's the face. Everybody makes that face. That's I don't know what true. It is. You just slowly die a little bit. Because, like, it's because you're presenting.
Yeah. The original video was before the pandemic.
Yeah. It was. It was before the pandemic, and I was just making it because I watched an Instagram story where my friend did that without realizing she was doing it, of course. And I was like, this is so funny. Like, how that's everybody's face always looks like that when they're ending a video. Like, you can always see the real face. And so then I made that video. But then, yeah, it totally had, like, a resurgence last year. It was crazy. Yeah.
That's wild. Because of that video, I smile after I press leave. Like, I still smile. I still keep it up, just being like, I'm so happy to be here. They have to believe that. And so I hope I am convincing someone.
I do it too, because I'm also like, I don't want to get caught making that face in real life and then have somebody record it and, like, be like, ha ha, she really does it too. But yeah, I do the same thing where I'll just, like, close the computer still smiling, walk away from the computer still smiling, and then let it all go.
Yeah. Keep up the act a little longer.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
I just watched it again. Still funny.
Oh, you did?
Still got it.
It's so crazy. It was the first time I've ever gone viral. Well, I think, like, really big viral. And it was, like, the first time that's ever happened to me. And I was just like, this is crazy. Like, it took me 9 seconds to make the video. I just posted it. I used to be kind of shy about posting on social media. And so I was like, well, I'm going to post it in my Instagram stories. And if 3 people respond to it, then I'll post it on Twitter. And literally immediately 3 people responded to it. And so then I was just like, okay, I guess I'll post it on Twitter. And then, like, in 10 minutes, it had, like, 1,000 likes. It was just crazy.
I love that for you. It's also kind of reassuring to know, like, someone as funny as you is still like, maybe this won't work, you know? It's just, like, you saw that video, you're like, if 3 people respond, I'll post it on Twitter. I just love the humility there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's like, it's nerve-wracking sometimes. And sometimes when you start to think about it too much, like, if you start to be like, I'm posting, all these people are going to see it and think something about me, then it gets crazy. But sometimes you just have to go and just put it out there and see how people react. So, yeah.
That's true. I test on Instagram first, like, because my Instagram's private, so I test with my friends, and then I'm like, okay, they do go. And then I go public to Twitter.
Let's rewind a little bit. We know you're funny now. Were you funny back then? Let's go back to, like, your childhood. Where did you grow up? Where were you born?
Okay, I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, and Kansas, kind of a suburb. I lived there. I went to college in Kansas. I lived there for a long time.
Yeah. What was that like?
It was good. I mean, it was interesting, but it was like a nice childhood. It was like my mom was white, my dad was black, and my parents weren't really married. So we mostly were just raised by our mom. And it was, like, pretty chill, except for the, you know, every other day being asked if we were adopted. And then, like, when we would walk up to my mom at a store when she was, like, buying something, the cashiers would be like, what? You know, like, who are these children? But, you know, other than that, it was great. It was just like a suburban, pretty chill life.
Yeah, I've never been to Kansas, so.
It's not bad. I mean, you know, I'm from, like, a little bit, like I said, a little bit more suburban area. I mean, there's obviously, like, a lot of smaller towns, but I liked growing up there. And I think that, like, now the downtown area has gotten really popping. Like, my sister and my mom live down there, and, like, there's, you know, a light rail so you can get around by taking public transit. Ooh. And just, like, a lot more, it's, like, a lot more residential than it used to be. It's a nice city.
Yeah, on the up and up.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of has, like, Portland vibes to me almost, like, where it's, like, a smaller city, and then there's lots of, like, cool little chefs that have come in from other states and cities and, like, have open restaurants and whatnot. Yeah, it was nice.
Nice.
Are your parents from that place originally, or did they move to Kansas from elsewhere?
My mom is from Queens, New York. Okay. So she's from New York. Her whole family's from here. And then my dad was from Topeka area. So he was from Kansas.
And you decided to stay for college, so you must have liked it that much. But in high school and going into college, did you know what you wanted to study? What did you go to college for? Like, what were you like in high school? What were your interests?
My freshman year of college, I went to school in Chicago.
Oh.
And I was going to Columbia College Chicago, which is, like, very expensive and, like, kind of, like, easy to get in kind of school. So it's just, like, it was okay, but it was just, like, I felt like I wasn't ready to live in Chicago. And I remember being like, I'm not ready to be here. I'm going to move back to Kansas, go to a cheaper school, and just get my degree, and then move back to Chicago. So I went to KU after that. And I studied theater. In high school, it was weird because it's like when I was younger, I was really shy. Mm. But then for some reason, I took a drama class in high school. I still don't even know, like, what made me want to do it. Mm-hmm. But I took a drama class, and By the end of high school, I was like crying to one of my teachers, one of my drama teachers. I was like, I want to be an actress professionally, but like, I don't know how to make it work because, you know, it's not a viable career option. And she told me, if that's all you want to do and you can't think of anything else you want to do, just study it. Just do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I went to college for. I went to college for theater. And it luckily worked out.
I feel
grateful that it worked out. I mean, I would have figured out my life if it hadn't, but I'm very glad that it did work out.
Yeah, us too, man.
Yeah.
Glad we know about you. So you moved back to Kansas after your freshman year of college. Uh-huh. What was the difference between studying theater there and then studying in Kansas? Did you find that, like, that transition fine?
Yeah, I felt like it was fairly similar. KU has an okay theater school, actually, that it felt like I was learning a lot and having a good time. Obviously, just in general, the environments are so different. Like in Chicago, it didn't feel like a college environment. Like I didn't live on campus. It's not even really a campus. I didn't live with all of the other students. I lived in like this random arts dorm that was just in Chicago. It wasn't related to any college. So I was living with like full-on grown-ass women. Like, I think my first and only roommate when we lived in the same room, because I never had a dorm or anything like that, but my first and only roommate where we lived in the same room was, I think she was, like, 24 or something, when I was, like, 18. So it was a little bit interesting. And she was a dancer. The college environment was just so different because in Chicago, it was just, like, living in the city, more or less. And there was no sports team or anything like that at Columbia. And then when I went to KU, it was obviously just such a bigger world, way more classic college, sports, which is I'm never a huge fan of, but it's fun to be able to like go to a basketball game. And the Jayhawks were always so good when I was, you know, in school. Yeah. They won the championship one year. So yeah, it was fun to have that. Like, I'm glad that I ended up going back to more of a traditional college just to kind of feel that vibe. I'm glad I never lived in a dorm because that ain't for me. But it was nice to get like a real college experience.
Yeah, for sure.
How did your family feel about that?
It's funny because it's like I always remember my mom being more supportive than I think my mom remembers being. And so that means she was like good at lying to me or something. I don't know. But I remember she was like okay with it. Like she was like, okay, you can major in theater. I do believe at one point she said it would be cool if you got a minor in business or something. You know, it'd be cool if you had something that was a little bit more stable. And so at one point I actually did try to go into education, theater education. And that's actually how I ended up back in Chicago through an internship. But like what I'm saying is like I had thought maybe I would try to do that. But even when I tried to go into like education and get like a side degree there, I was just like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
I just want to be a dumbass actor. I just want to be in that world. I don't want to have to try to, nothing else quite computes for me. You know, that's just like, that's what I ended up doing was just studying just straight theater and getting a degree in theater.
Wow. So when you graduated, were you more interested in like stage performance or were you always interested in camera stuff and you just kind of transitioned into that?
Yeah, it was interesting. I think I was always more theater oriented. Like when I graduated, I was performing at a theater in Kansas City doing a show there. And then I eventually moved to Chicago because I was looking at internships with Steppenwolf and Second City.
Oh, cool.
And I ended up taking the internship at Steppenwolf, which was like a theater education internship. My goal when I graduated was always to be crying on stage, dramatic roles. Like that was what I always thought I was going to do. That was what I just thought my path was going to be. And I thought it would be theater. And so I was like, I'm not ready for New York. So I'll move to Chicago and do theater there. And then hopefully maybe end up in New York one day. For me, it was also like TV and movies didn't feel accessible. I mean, they definitely weren't accessible in Kansas, and they were when I moved to Chicago. They didn't have all the shit there that they have now. They had like, I don't know, they had theater,
right?
And so,
did they have Second City yet?
Yeah, Second City's been around since the 50s.
You're right.
But I didn't even know much about Second City. I was like, I wasn't a comedy person, and so what happened was I was, looking at those two internships and I ended up going with the Steppenwolf one. But then the woman at Second City, her name is Deanna. She's like the diversity and outreach coordinator. She was like, I know this isn't your thing, but if you ever want to take classes here, you know, you can take a free class if you just help me for a few hours a week. And I was like, well, of course I want to take a free class. So I did that. And then she was like, if you ever want to audition for us, you know, just give us a headshot and, you know, just consider it. And I was like, okay. And then I auditioned and just started, it just worked. Like I just started working for them. Yeah. Like, cause it was just, it was a fit. It's one of those things where it's like, that the shit finds you.
Yeah.
I've been a funny person, but like I didn't know how well I would fit in that genre until I tried it, until somebody just told me to just start doing it more or less.
That's so interesting.
Well, it's crazy. Yeah, because it's crazy like being thrown into that world where it's like at Second City, everybody is there for comedy. Like everybody moved there for comedy and they wanted to work at Second City their whole life. And so in some ways I felt like an imposter because I was just kind of like, I don't know. I mean, I appreciate it and it's fun and funny, but it wasn't my goal or dream. But yeah, right. Once I started working there, it was like, it was just a perfect fit. Cause yeah, it was just like singing, comedy, playing instruments, whatever it would be. And I kind of do all of those things. Plus just being like a loud, goofy person. And I was able to pick up improvising kind of on the fly by watching my castmates and just kind of going along with what they were doing. It was just, so yeah, it was kind of just like I started taking a different path and then that became the only path for me in comedy ever since then.
I love that. I love, you never really know where life will take you, I guess. And like, you probably were so set in that one dream you had. You're like, there's no other option for me. I can't do anything else. And then suddenly... Yeah. This path opens up and you're like, well, this is, I also love this. I don't know. I kind of like that.
I feel like that's what's so interesting. It can be so interesting about this career in general is like, you don't always know all of the jobs that you can have, especially as an 18-year-old or 24-year-old. You don't know. And then when you start seeing them, you're like, oh, holy shit. Like I might want to, you know, like for people that location scout, like they probably didn't know it was a job growing up, you know? Yeah.
The first production couple designer, times, they didn't know. The first couple times I was on set, I was introduced to all these jobs I didn't know about, you know? Like exactly, like production design or location scouts or like even just art PAs and the people that make the art and everything. It's just... It's fascinating. Let's take our first break and we will be right back. Okay, we're back. So you're doing comedy now in Chicago. I mean, this is, I'm talking to your past self. At a certain point, you were like, okay, I want to pursue comedy now versus this dramatic stage goal that you had before. What happens then? Like, do you start doing stand-up?
I never did stand-up. I only did improv. Stand-up scares the shit out of me because there's something about improv that you can say and do things on the fly and have fun, but there's always a net to catch you. Like, there's teammates. There's people behind you that'll jump in when they see you flailing. And so that always felt better to be more collaborative with people. Stand-up always just scared the shit out of me. Like, that's even we would even do, like, stand-up sets after shows where it's like, you know, everybody would get to do a little stand-up thing and then we'd improvise off of that. I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
That's fair.
I can't do stand-up. Yeah.
That is very fair.
I mean, also, there's, like, a type of... I guess I shouldn't hate on stand-ups. I was just going to say, it's a type of community, stand-up versus improv. And I think improv is nicer, in my opinion.
Well, I think so. I think because it's by nature, it's more collaborative. I think you know, stand-up is very solo. You're on the road by yourself. I mean, you're definitely around other comics. But for the most part, when you're working, you're by yourself. And so it's a different mentality. And I love collaboration, especially in comedy. I don't think that I'm – I think I'm a funny person, but I love – having a funny idea and having other people boost it with me.
Yeah.
I think that's way more fun for me.
I agree. I think it's also just nice to have, like people to bounce ideas off of. I think if you're, it's isolating if you're like just making jokes up by yourself and like just doing it at a mic one day, like hoping it lands. Like I just think it's scary. And I dabbled in it when I first got here and it's very terrifying. But okay. So you're in Chicago. How long were you in Chicago and where did you go after that?
So I was there for almost 9 years.
Oh, wow.
There was 1 year I lived in New York. I kind of go all over the place. There was 1 year I lived in New York, but for the most part, I was in Chicago for 8 years. And then I was kind of just done with it because Second City was fine, but like all of their shows are the same thing, you know, like a bunch of sketches, improv, And then that's the show. It's kind of always the same thing. And so I had done so many shows that I was kind of like feeling a little artistically stagnant. And so I was kind of trying to decide where to go. And there was this like showcase in LA, that the CBS diversity showcase.
Ooh,
that
yes.
has yeah. always was like a thing that I saw other friends doing. And then they seemed to be successful. And so I was like, oh, maybe I'll do that. And so I had auditioned for it before, didn't get it. And then I auditioned for it again and then did. And so when I found out I got it, I was like, oh, well, I'll just move to LA. Because I get to a point where, like, I had just done a show in D.C. with Second City. Mm-hmm. And we came back and all my stuff was in storage because I was like, I just don't want to live here anymore. But I don't yeah. know where I want to go, so I'll sublet a place and figure it out on the way. And it worked out really well. Because then when I realized I could move to LA, I just left in, you know, 2 weeks. I was out. I left wow. Chicago. And then I was in L.A., and then I went to New York for a job and then came back to L.A. So, yeah, I nice. Pop all over. Mm-hmm.
That's the way to do it. It's like go where the opportunity takes you and then just like feel it out. And the CBS Diversity Showcase, after you got that, were you in your mind like, I've made it? Or like when was yeah. that kind of moment for you?
Well, I think what's interesting is because we would see so many people in, you know, Second City is a different kind of theater acting experience. Managers come there, yeah. agents come there, NBC, MTV, all of these different networks come to see the shows. Mm-hmm. And so you see people either get scooped up out of there or go to SNL from mm-hmm. there or book pilots straight from Chicago. And so you're like, oh, wow. oh, you see all these people have kind of what seems to be easy success. And so with the CBS Diversity Showcase, I saw a couple of my friends just seem to like really like, oh, they moved to LA, they did the showcase, and now they're on a show. And I was like, mm-hmm. great.
Yeah.
So you think I'll probably have a similar path. And it ain't that. I mean, it ain't. you know,
yeah.
I met my agent and like a couple other people at the showcase. It was just like whatever. I met some friends and then I met a couple people and then I was, you know, on the fucking hustle struggle bus for the next couple of years. I mean, I would book stuff here and there. I wouldn't say I didn't work, but it was just, you know, it was definitely not what you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
That's right. For sure.
Yeah. How did you break into acting in front of the camera kind of stuff from improv?
I don't know if I got this through improv or Second City, but I hosted this weird show on PBS, the local PBS in Chicago called Local USA. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that was like my first experience really starting to work in TV. Mm-hmm. And then I know with improv, like I ended up doing a KFC commercial that a lot of improvisers had been doing KFC commercials. And I did one where we got to improvise the whole thing. And I think it was just kind of things like that where you start to get really random experiences, hosting a show, doing right. commercials, you know, in Chicago, that was the main thing at the time. And so, yeah, I just started kind of getting into that world. And then because I was a performer at Second City and because networks and people come and managers and whatnot, they come to see the shows, they liked me. And I started auditioning for pilots, which it made me feel more tuned in to the TV world.
Yeah.
And so then I felt more comfortable working in that world once I was out in LA and mm-hmm. working more.
That's funny, the KFC commercial.
Mm-hmm. It was so funny.
That's the best part about watching commercials now is you just see all your comic friends.
Yeah, like, every single time. It's like, oh, what's his face? Yeah. Oh,
I know so many comedians doing commercials. I know the other day I was like, we were watching, He Won't Get Far on Foot. Have you guys seen that movie?
Yeah.
And I was like, at first I was like telling my mom, like, oh, I know that person. And then by a certain point, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to tell you how many people I know in this movie because it's getting excessive. It's ridiculous.
That happens when I watch movies with my parents, too, or my sisters. I'm like, oh, that's what's, like, this is so-and-so. This is so-and-so. They're like, we don't care. Like,
we don't give a fuck. Just watch the movie.
He Won't Get Far on Foot the Joaquin Phoenix movie?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Edgar Montplaisir is in it for a hot second.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He has, like, a small role.
Gus Van Sant?
Yeah.
Gus Van Sant.
Okay.
It's crazy.
I have a story. I have a friend who's in that movie as well, and he has to act against Joaquin. And you know mm-hmm. how actors, I guess it's just a very real thing. Most actors, they do like whisper acting.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah.
I had a friend who was in that movie, is playing a role opposite Joaquin, not like a big role or anything, but Joaquin is doing his whisper acting and my friend cannot understand anything Joaquin is saying. So he keeps missing his cue to say his line because he's like,
Yeah.
And he said it was like the most, because, you know, you have Gus Van Sant sitting there. Yeah. He's like, what was that? Like,
yeah. And I totally have had this experience too, because I have bad hearing and a very loud voice. So it's hard for me to speak quietly on camera, which was something I had to learn too, like just how to be smaller on camera.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have had that experience before where you're working with, you know, an actor that's been working.
Yeah.
They're pretty famous. And you're like, I can't fucking hear a goddamn thing that they're saying. And like, you have to respond to them. But it's like a panic attack, because you're like, I know that when they stop talking, I have to start. But I also have to act, and I also have to respond. Like, I can't. It is crazy how quiet they talk. It's crazy.
It's surreal. And then when you actually watch a movie, you hear that they're like, yeah, so here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, you're more aware of it. Edgar has so many wild stories about that whole process. It's a funny movie to know the background of.
I bet.
But you've been on Hulu, you've been on Comedy Central, you've been on a couple of things. What was the project that you were like, not like I've made it, but like, oh, this is, I'm getting the hang of this, and like, or maybe like it was something that maybe your mom was impressed with. Like, what was like, was there a project like that for you?
Technically, you would think the Comedy Central show I was on would be that, because it was the first big series regular part that I had gotten. I was a correspondent on The Opposition with Jordan Klepper, and I moved to New York for it. I thought it was going to be like The Daily Show. I figured we'd be on for years. And I was like, this is going to change my life. You know, like it wasn't even a question for me. I was like, this is the one. And so I thought that was it. It was definitely, booking that was definitely the biggest, craziest moment of my life, like the most like, oh my God, kind of moment, you know, can't believe it. After that show was canceled and I did literally one episode of Shrill. But I think playing that role that I played with the lines that I played, I was like the stripper that said like, you've got a fat ass and big titties, you can tell men what to do or whatever. Like I said that. And so there was something about like that kind of role in that kind of show. Carrie Brownstein was directing it. Yeah. She's fucking amazing. And it was just such an awesome experience. And then I got a lot of awesome feedback from it. Plus, like, it was the first time I've actually enjoyed watching myself on camera. So I would say it's a mix between the two for different reasons, you know?
Right.
It's interesting because sometimes you have the biggest job of your life, but you feel... crazy because you're scared. And that's what I was like when I was on The Opposition. I would be lying if I said everything was, you know, perfect. I was a nervous wreck. But then it's nice to, after that experience, have other experiences where you're like, okay, I'm going to have more of these moments.
You know? Well, especially on a set like Shrill, just having like so many like-minded people and like, Carrie Brownstein directing you. And like, I just think that's an experience.
Oh, yeah. And I was – I auditioned for the pilot of Shrill. And when I read it, I was like, oh, my God, I have to be on this show. Like, I have to. It was just so – I just loved it so much. Right. And I didn't get the part that I auditioned for. It was Lolly. Mm. She played the best friend. That was the part that I auditioned for. I didn't get that, obviously. But when I auditioned for Shrill again, I was like, I have to get this. And then when – I got it. I was like so excited. But then I was like, oh, holy shit, I'm going to play a stripper. Like, I'm a very modest person. I've never even been to a damn strip club. And it was scary. But there was like, but it was like that when we started working on like, what are you going to wear? How are you going to act? What are you going to have to do on set? Mm-hmm. It was all like super protected, super like strong women, you know, not taking any, like just kind of saying this is how it's going to go, minimal people on set that day. It was amazing.
I love that.
It was very safe, which I was like, thank God, because if I had to wear a thong and like work,
It's a different show.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun. I really enjoyed Shrill. Mm-hmm. It was just such a great show because there were also moments where I was like, it's too real. But overall, it was such a fun time. You get to LA, you do this showcase. How has been like auditioning been in this industry? Like, do you go out for a lot of ethnically ambiguous roles, or like, what is that experience like?
It's been very interesting. It started at Second City. It was the first time that I was like, what? Because I am Black and white and Jewish and not religious at all, and was raised by my white mom with barely any Black family. I mean, no Black family, but I mean, obviously I'm cultured. I'm not totally blind to my Blackness. But it was interesting because moving to Chicago and being at Second City, they told me that I had no point of view. What? And I was like, what does that mean? And they were like, eventually, you know, they get to the point, you know, because this is how, you know, Hollywood, all of them, they always kind of do the same thing where they just say something that means nothing. And you're like, what does that mean?
Right.
What are you trying to say?
Right.
Just say the thing because you might as well just say it because saying the you know, ambiguous thing isn't helping me.
Yeah.
No point of view. And then they were like, well, you're Black, white, and Jewish. Why don't you talk about that? And I was like, I don't know. You're white. Why don't you just talk about being white all the time? You know what I mean? Like, it didn't make sense to me because I had never felt that to be a person with opinions, I had to have opinions that fit in a box.
Right.
I never felt like that. Growing up, I felt very lucky that I didn't have friends that did that. I didn't have my mom and my family didn't do that. I mean, of course, everybody deals with like ignorant people, but for the most part, I had a very like safe environment. So then when I get to LA, I had already kind of been through the ringer with that. And I was already a little bit like, what the hell? And the showcase, it was run by people who were very limited in their thinking, I'll say.
Yeah. I've had a couple of friends tell me their experience about it, and it wasn't good.
If the idea is we're going to do a diversity showcase, that just means people of different colors, genders, sexes, sexual orientations, showcasing their fucking skills, man, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But instead, it was like, we're going to make the Black people be drug dealers. And,
right, yeah.
you know, we're going to stereotype people. And that was so strange to me.
Yeah.
To the point that I did end up bringing it to one of the producers. And she's, you know, gone through her own things with CBS that also you can look up. But she was great. And she was very understanding about it. But it was like, what are we doing? Why are we always having to do this with people? That's what casting is. It started out, it's always like kind of a little bit of a process. Like I met my agent who I love. I'm still with him to this day. He's the best. And he really gets me. But there's always like this like beginning when you first meet someone in any setting for me, being maybe ambiguous or presenting one way and kind of being different than, you know, I'm not a easily boxed up person, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so they try to put you in these roles where you're like, listen, I'm never going to fucking book that. Like, stop sending me out for that. I had to tell them, you know.
What was a role like that? Can you give us an example if that's possible?
I mean, the easiest one to say, I don't have anything specific, but the easiest one is always like a slave or like a mom in the projects, you know, that kind of like thing that they want that they're not going to get from everyone because Black people are a spectrum and it's not one type of Black person, but a lot of times they want to put it as, they want it to be easy. So they're looking for this thing. And I was like, I'm not going to book stuff like that. Like, I'm not going to book a mom on the South Side of Chicago. Cause I'm not cool. Like, I can't do it. I don't have that vibe. It's not, and you know, and if I try to do it, I seem like I'm being fake and you're not going to want to give me that job. So I had to tell my agent, like, and, you know, just everybody, send me out for roles that are, that a white woman would get fucking called in for. Send me out for any role that's ambiguous in any way. Send me out for stuff that just is almost, not generic, but where it's open.
Yeah.
So that it's like, so that it's not so specific to a type. Because I'm not a type and it's like you wear yourself out trying to be that person.
Yeah.
And instead, I am just the type of person to like say, like, let's not fucking do this. Like, we're wasting everyone's energy here.
I'm glad that you're someone that is like that because it's so true. It's I think every person of color, everyone should just go out for the same roles other than just like having a role so based on someone's race and identity. That's just like so problematic to me because like tokenism is not diversity. Yeah. And I think that's what Hollywood thinks. They probably think those two are interchangeable or something. But
they absolutely do. Yeah.
But you going out for the same roles as like some random ass white woman, that's what's supposed to happen. Everyone's supposed to go out for those same roles. And I think the default is always like auditioning the same kind of people because they have their own bias in their head of what a normal, in quotes, person looks like. Or like
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think I get guilty of it, too, because it's like after auditioning for so long, sometimes you're just like, I don't want to fuck with this because they're not going to fuck with me. You know what I mean? Like, I'll see roles and I love going out for them because I can totally play them. Like, I'll see it for like, you know, like, let's say it's like an influencer or like a popular cheerleader or like whatever, you know, I would love to play a role like that. But then sometimes I'll find myself being like, oh, they want a blonde. Why are they calling me in for this? And then I'm like, dang, now I'm, you know, I got my mind wrapped up like that too. It sucks sometimes, but then I'll be right.
It's a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle. Mm-hmm. Let's take our last break. When we get back, I'd love to ask you about this new podcast with Marcella.
So
we'll be right back. Okay. We're back. I know we've jumped around a lot, but before we get too close to the end, I would love to talk to you about this podcast you're going to do with Marcella Arguello, The Scroll Down. It just sounds like the perfect pairing I've ever imagined. You guys are both so hilarious. And Marcella in particular, I've told you this before, she was one of the first comics I really fell in love with when I moved to LA. She like low-key made me quit stand-up because I was like, I'm never going to be this funny in a good way. Like, she's proud of that fact. And I'm also grateful to her because it's a hustle and she's the best at doing it. But what made you and her come together to make this podcast? Like, what was the inspiration and in wanting to do it?
We got together in a way, like on Twitter, like I saw her do stand-up. I saw a clip of her doing stand-up and I was like, oh my God, this woman is so funny. And so I just followed her. And then eventually she followed me back. And I think we just formed one of those online friendships where you talk all the time, but you don't know each other. So one time we were like, yo, like, let's get together and just meet up and like hang out and see what, you know, see if we can be friends because we live in the same city. And so we went out and we, you know, just hung out a little bit and I was like, dang, she's really cool. And like, we just got along. So we became friends. And then I don't know, but I think at one point we were just talking about, I think it was probably something like we were just, you know, talking shit or something. We were just thinking like, wouldn't it be fun if like two women of color were on a show together and just like talking shit. And typically what we would talk about when we would be texting or just hanging out is like Twitter, because it's just this whole world and there's, you know, different people that you like end up hating together and sending each other screenshots or like talking shit on. And then there's just like things that will happen where everybody has one point of view, but then you might have a different point of view. So you kind of talk about it secretly to your friend. And so we kind of just realized like we're always doing this together. And also the things we talk about from social media have bigger social, there's bigger social conversations that can come from those topics. And so we were like, let's just do a podcast. And then I had been, but then it like didn't go anywhere. And the pandemic happened. And I was guesting on so many podcasts just out of boredom and because I like being on podcasts. And my manager was like, hey, like, do you think you'd ever want to pitch a podcast to HeadGum? Like, do you have any ideas? Because I can get you a meeting with HeadGum. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I have lots of ideas. And one of them was the one with Marcella. So I pitched it to them and they loved it. And so the rest is history. I'm so excited for it to come out. It's going to be really fun.
I'm so excited. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I will binge or just like, I mean, no, I'll listen to it every week. But like, I just want something to laugh about.
I think what's cool like about our energy is like we're very different people. I mean, I'm from the Midwest, so I'm more Midwestern, more kind of friendly and cautious and, you know, quieter about some opinions or like scared to put things out there. And Marcella is just like, doesn't give a fuck, don't fuck with me type of person. And she, you know, she calls me out a lot. We will bicker about things a lot. And so it's fun to like have that kind of dynamic.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. Yeah, for sure.
That is fun. I mean, I feel like Marcella's been telling me about this podcast for a while now. So I've just been sitting patiently.
Yeah, she's been really excited about it. It's been a really long process, too, for some reason. We've just been kind of developing it with HeadGum since, like, November. So, yeah, we're just so excited for it to come out.
So were you guys recording this whole time?
No, we just recorded the pilot. And I didn't know if the pilot was going to actually air or not, but it is going to be our first episode. And it's really, I mean, it's just legitimately funny and fun. And I think people are really going to like it. We have lots of different, you know, kind of topics that we talk about different topics every week. Sometimes we'll have guests. Most of the time we won't. And it's just kind of, I think it's just fun to listen to. So I think people are going to really like it. And I'm excited that it's finally coming out.
Wait.
Ugh, yes.
Yeah, Marcella has a gift to, like, call you out or like call shit out, but also like be right. Like literally, she was one of the first, if not the first guest we had on this podcast. And back then we were doing a lot of news stories and like going through the news cycles of the day or whatever. But we were doing this thing. We were just like, because the guest was there. So we would just kind of like fire through these news stories all the time. And she was like, why are you guys doing that? Like, don't you want to talk like in depth about X, Y, and Z? We were like, you know what? You're right. And we restructured the whole thing. I just love her.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And that's the thing, like, a person like me, I would never say that. I would just kind of think it, because I definitely have been on some podcasts where I was like, I mean, they could fix this a little bit. I could help. But I would never say that because, you know, I'm scared. And awkward. And she always says it. And, you know, she and that's the thing is, like, her bluntness is always, there's always good intent behind it. It's never malicious, which is... It's nice to know somebody's in your corner, even if they're like, you dumb bitch. You're like, yeah, you're saying that lovingly, though, and I know you are. You know, like, you know.
I agree.
Yes.
I feel like I'm also very blunt and unfiltered, but seeing her version of it is like, she's a god. I just can't get over it because...
Oh, yeah. She has nothing around.
That's, she's not the guest, though, on this podcast, but we do love her.
Don't tell Marcel about this podcast. She would hate us gushing about her like this.
She probably would, honestly.
She would hate this. She'd be annoyed with us.
Do not tell her. Do not
tell her. Even though she technically introduced us, she does not need to know.
That's right.
I literally have a shirt with her face on it that she used to have for like one of her tours. And I was like thinking about wearing it today, but I was like, I can't do that.
It's so funny.
Be cool.
I was like, no, don't be that person. My real self.
Great. I'm very happy that we ended up getting together and working together. Cause truly I do remember seeing like the first time seeing her do stand up. I literally just saw a video that some other person posted and I was like, who is that? She's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, we gotta be friends. And so it's fun when you meet people online and it works out like that, you know.
100%. And also just like that's like how adults become friends, I feel like, now is like you both find each other online. You're like, let's just meet in person and see if this works. So I'm really glad it did.
I feel like so many of my friendships are through Twitter especially, because I didn't used to be on social media, but then after that video went viral and then I started tweeting more and just, I don't know, getting more followers. That's when I started, like, my social life became Twitter and my friends became Twitter. The Twitter friends became real friends, which is nice.
I love that.
Thank you so much for doing this show. It's not over yet. I'm just telling you, thank you.
That did seem like an ending.
It did.
No, I just, I mean, we're now Twitter friends.
Yeah. Hi, baby.
And I guess podcast friends. Well, we'll see. You know what? Exactly. What if I'm just like, I won't accept this podcast. I'm just kidding.
I'll never see you ever. I hate you.
Ever since Marcella told me, I've been kind of like, Marcella should be hosting a podcast. I don't think she's ever hosted one before. And then now
I don't think she had one before.
I followed you for a long time on Twitter. And I've been watching you from afar.
I like it.
So this is great. I'm very excited for both of you. And I'm so happy to finally, you know what? More women of color in podcasting. You didn't hear it from me.
And our producer, our sound engineer, all women of color.
Love it.
Fucking awesome.
Love it. I love that.
We have the same lawyer. She's a woman of color. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. It's just like we're all together and we all work for each other. It's great.
I love that. Also, said, you both are just a good, like, I just can't wait to hear that union. You know what I mean? Like, I can't wait.
My mom obviously would like almost anything I do. She hates when I do a British accent. Other than that, she likes everything.
Wait, why?
I don't fucking know. I think she thinks it's too like theatery when I do it. Oh. Like, it's not, but it's just like, it sounds like theater to her. So she doesn't like it. She's like,
she hates like theater? An actor.
I think it's like actory, like too actory, like a theater, like a musical, like, you know,
like a drama kid.
Kid. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
So she hates when I do that, but she loves everything else. But she was, I know, it's very specific. It's like the one thing that she's just like, why the fuck you gotta do that? And I was in a lot of shows where I did that because I can do an English accent. And she was just like, nah, I like the show, but I don't know. I didn't like the accent. But she listened to the pilot and she was just like, she loved it.
Oh, yay.
Our energies are so different. Like, I'm just like very hyper and nervous and she's very like cool, calm and like chill, grounding, also talking shit, like sly. she's smart. You know, it's just like a cool, I think it's a good mix. So I think people, I think people are really going to like, I really do. Like, if it wasn't my podcast, I would listen to it.
I, again, don't listen to a lot of podcasts, but I'm so excited for this one. So excited.
I really don't listen to a lot either. It's kind of funny. I just started listening to a couple and I'm like, okay, podcasts are all right. I get it.
Yeah. I think the only ones that I've enjoyed are the ones that are very short. Like Jamie Loftus made My Year in Mensa and Lolita Pod, and I loved those. But yeah. Also, it was also more, I didn't feel as overwhelmed because I was signing up for a limited project. You know, think the commitment, I have like a commitment issue when it comes to podcast listening, because I'm just like, I have to keep up with this every week. Imagine. Like, yeah. I don't know.
That feels like a lot. I think that would be a lot. I get it.
Yeah. But I'm very excited to keep up with this one. I think this is going to be my first weekly, like looking forward to podcast.
I think it'll be cool. And it's going to be so topical. It's going to be, you know, what just happened. And so everybody's still going to be wanting to talk about that stuff. And then to hear, I think, our little thoughts on it will be fun for everybody. I think it's going to be cool. I don't know why, but I have a really good feeling about it. I mean, that's good. I should, but I just love it. It's going to come out every Thursday starting next week.
Starting what date next week? Because this probably won't come out before it comes out.
July 15th.
This will be out after July 15th. So if you haven't listened to the scroll down yet, everybody, please go listen. I'm telling you from the future that it's very funny and you won't regret it. I already know that. So
from the future.
I can't wait.
Oh wait, no, we would be from the past. We wouldn't be from the future.
I am from the past, but I'm pretending I've already listened to it. So I guess I was just like thinking like...
Because of when it airs.
Yeah. So I'm saying it's already very funny. Whatever. Gotcha. It doesn't matter. Just we're saying the same thing. We're just getting our timelines confused.
Oh, gotcha. I don't know what time is. So you know how I am. Just no, so
time
free.
Is a flat circle.
It
time
is a flat is a, circle. Yeah. It means nothing.
No, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, thank you so much for doing the show.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
This is such a blast. Before you go, tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet if they somehow don't already know. And also just plug anywhere they can follow the scroll down or anything else that you have coming up.
Okay. I have another thing coming up that I'm very excited about. So I'm going to be on the cartoon Jellystone, which will be on HBO Max.
Jellystone. I love a cartoon. That's a dream. Playing a cartoon is a dream.
It was one of my big dreams, and so I just, like, can't believe it. And it became, like, a really, you know, I've been doing it now. We've been recording it for, like, the past year and a half. Anyway, it's going to be really fun. It's on HBO Max. I play Jabberjaw, who's my main character, which used to be a white man. So listeners, get ready for something new. And I play Squidly Diddly and Dee Dee Sykes. You'll love that show. It's on HBO Max. And that starts July 29th. And then you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nicole Thurman, NICCOLETHURMAN. And then, yes, please listen to the scroll down, like and subscribe, leave us a review. You can listen on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, I think wherever you get your podcasts, but those are the main ones. But please listen to the scroll down. It's going to be a fucking blast.
Yay!
Yes, okay, and go follow Nicole on everything. And you secretly have a TikTok, I understand?
Oh, yeah. I never post on there. I just use it to, like, look at other people's videos. And I posted a few videos, but I'm enjoying having 100 followers and doing nothing with it.
Mm-hmm. It's risk-free.
It's quiet. You know, it's loud on Twitter and Instagram for me. So it's nice to have a little quiet room where you can just look at other people's videos and laugh.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
Well, this has been a true joy. I'm going to wrap us out of here. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. This is Ethnically Am, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
I'm just at Anna Hosni on Twitter. Whatever. Who needs it?
I'm so excited that you're a cartoon. That is literally just a dream. I'm just so excited that you've achieved that.
Yeah.
But anyway, until next time, listen to the scroll down and what was the
watch cartoon? Jellystone on HBO Max.
Yeah. Watch Jellystone on HBO Max. Listen to the scroll down. You won't regret it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.